You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
They're not there to serve you and me and the family farmer. They're there beholden to billionaires and their corporate overlords.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
You see our nation fraying and fracturing.
This is not normal. This is not the country that I grew up in.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Correct. We know better. We know better.
Clip that.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday, one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Free Ticket Friday here across the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got the last opportunity this Friday for you to win four tickets on Civic Media's club level to the Brewers versus the San Francisco Giants game on Saturday, August 23rd. That start time is 6:10 p.m., so you're not going to want to go anywhere. I'm going to be dropping the word to win on this Free Ticket Friday in this block. So don't go anywhere. Stick around with us. 855-752-4842. You're going to want to text the word to win in via the Civic Media app. You can get that for free wherever you get your apps for. Just search for Civic Media. Download that app and then text in the word to win for you to be entered to win those four tickets to the Brewers versus the Giants. Again, that game, August 23rd at 6:10. Here's the added bonus. There's a gift giveaway that afternoon, and it is a Bob Uecker golf umbrella. Who doesn't want one of those, especially given the miracle that's going on in Milwaukee with our Brewers this season? Absolutely incredible. They'll be throwing a first pitch out in tonight's game at about 5:40 p.m. They're in Cincinnati this evening playing the Reds. So I'll be watching as soon as I get off the air with each and every one of you. We got a packed show today. Tons going on in the news. So let's jump right in. The rule of five deadline is today for the Trump administration to turn over the Epstein files to the Senate committee that has oversight responsibility. Have you never heard of the rule of five? Well, I hadn't either. Let me tell you what it is. Senate Democrats on July 30th invoked this little-known law that directs executive agencies to turn over information to congressional oversight committees. The interesting part here is that this law, again, known as the Rule of Five, but it's technically Section 2954, allows just five members on the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs to submit an information request on matters within its jurisdiction to any federal agency. This was enacted in 1928, and it's pretty obscure, but the interesting part here, the reason it's called the Rule of Five, is that those five members can be the minority. In other words, in these times, the Democrats on that Senate Committee on Homeland Security, and indeed, that is the law that was invoked back on July 30th. This rule or this law has rarely been used. It was used once in 2017 and in 2001. This particular request, as described by Chuck Schumer, says the request covers, quote, all documents, files, evidence, or other materials in the possession of the Department of Justice or the FBI related to the case of U.S. v. Jeffrey Epstein. And that request specified that any information turned over to the committee should, quote, ensure the private information of any victims is protected. So watch this space. Chuck Schumer posting about it on X today saying, if the DOJ and the FBI do not comply, they will pursue litigation. This particular provision of federal law, to the best of my knowledge, and I did some research today, has never been litigated. So again, you think that transparency is important when it comes to the sex trafficking of minors? And what the heck is going on with Ghislaine Maxwell's transfer to a minimum security prison in Texas when sex traffickers of minors should never be held in minimum security prisons? Watch this space. There may be some litigation firing off in days, potentially even early next week. We'll keep you posted on that. A ton of news going on in the ongoing showdown, I don't know what to call it, related to Donald Trump's seizure of control of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Force. Last night, late, Attorney General Pam Bondi issued the formal directive placing the Metropolitan Police under federal control. This was the formalization of what Trump had announced earlier this week. That declaration also established Terry Cole, who is the administrator of the Drug Enforcement Agency, as the emergency police commissioner and purportedly gave him full control of the police department. Purportedly, more on that in just a minute. That directive from Pam Bondi issued late last night also said that Metropolitan Police Department leaders, quote, must receive approval from Commissioner Cole before issuing any directives. It also mandated that MPD abandon a directive its chief of police had issued earlier yesterday, limiting the information that officers could provide to federal immigration officials. Moreover, that directive revoked immigration protections that the Washington, D.C. City Council had adopted into law. Again, more on this in just a minute. Finally, the directive last night from Attorney General Bondi specified that the department is to fully enforce a section of the city code that makes it a misdemeanor to continue, quote, obstructive demonstration in public areas after being ordered by officers to disperse. I'm totally comfortable that the Trump administration won't abuse that order at all. I'm sure that they will exercise due restraint in acknowledgement of the deep and reverential respect we have as Americans for our First Amendment rights to protest our government. I'm sure nothing bad will happen as to that directive from the Attorney General late last night. On all of this, I know I've talked to you folks about the fact that we've got Rick Schlesinger, the CEO of the Brewers, coming onto this program next Wednesday, August 20th at 5:30, and I asked you to mark your calendars for that. You should also mark your calendars for a critically important interview of current D.C. Metropolitan Police Department officer Daniel Hodges. He is a January 6th hero. He was attacked that day by the insurrectionists riled up and directed by Donald Trump. He's going to be speaking with us next Thursday, August 21st at 5 p.m., so put that on your calendars as well. Now, returning to today's breaking news, so we've got this order from Attorney General Bondi late last evening. And after that order was given, even later yesterday, the Attorney General for the District of Columbia, a guy by the name of Brian Schwalb, he wrote a letter to the chief of police specifically concluding that Donald Trump's takeover of D.C. Metropolitan Police Department is illegal and advising the chief of police that she should not cooperate in that takeover. In relevant part, here's a quote from that letter. Again, this issued very late last night by the Attorney General of Washington, D.C. It's addressed to the chief of police of the District of Columbia's Metropolitan Police Department. Quote, it is my opinion that the Bondi order is unlawful and that you are not legally obligated to follow it. Wow. And this, quote, regardless of the Bondi order, no official other than you, you being the chief of DC's police, regardless of the Bondi order, no official other than you may exercise all the powers and duties of the chief of police or issue any executive orders, general orders, or other written directives that apply to members of the MPD. Again, we'll have MPD Officer Dan Hodges with us next Thursday. Put that on your calendars. We'll talk to him what it's like to work in a police department where you're potentially being given illegal orders on a daily basis. Pretty astounding. Then this morning, that same District of Columbia Attorney General filed a lawsuit in federal court in Washington, D.C., challenging Pam Bondi's directive. A hearing on that order went on today. It began at 1 p.m. local time here in Milwaukee before District Court Judge Anna Reyes. Again, this is the suit brought by D.C.'s Attorney General. It alleged that the Trump administration's move to federalize the MPD was, quote, a brazen usurpation of the district's authority, and it exceeded the president's authority and is void. We're going to link the complaint for that lawsuit in our show notes today. You can find those at civicmedia.us/shows. Just look for today's episode, and we'll have the link to the complaint in today's show notes, as well as the brief filed by D.C.'s Attorney General in support of their motion for a temporary restraining order. We've got additional breaking news. I'm going to fill in and share with you some of how that hearing went on today. But here, this is some very, very recent breaking news. Thank you to my senior producer, Jamie Martinson, for helping me keep you up to date. Mitchell Reich, a lawyer representing the District of Columbia, said the parties were focusing on rewriting Section 1 of Attorney General Pam Bondi's order, which put Terry Cole in charge of the MPD. Again, he's the administrator of the DEA currently. Those changes would include refining Cole's role to keep the power to make changes to police policy with the mayor's office. Judge Reyes said that if the parties cannot come to agreement in very short order, she is going to rule today. Incredibly important. Mayor Bowser, again, the mayor of Washington, D.C., and Brian Schwab, the attorney general, D.C., are outside of the courthouse celebrating the outcome, talking to reporters, quote, my expectation is the key issue with respect to control and command of our MPD has been resolved today, and that it is clear as a matter of law that MPD is under the control of the chief of police appointed by the mayor. And quote, that is from DC's Attorney General Brian Schwab. Wow. Other language today from Judge Reyes in that hearing included this. It is antithetical, excuse me, she said this, I agree with you that they, meaning the Trump administration, are not allowed to take over the police force. And she went on and said this, addressing a lawyer for the Department of Justice, if I gave Mr. Roth, the Trump administration's lawyer, if I gave him truth serum, he'd probably agree, end quote. I've never heard anything like it from a district court, a federal district court judge, saying that if she gave one of the lawyers truth serum, that lawyer would actually agree with what the opposing party's counsel said. This was an incredible, incredible day of legal developments. Again, this is quite extraordinary. Notably, Judge Reyes focused the hearing on the temporary restraining order today, not on whether or not there is a crime emergency in Washington, D.C. She focused only on whether or not the Trump action was legal as a matter of U.S. and D.C. statutory interpretation, and indicated she thought it was not. We're going to keep you posted as that news develops. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Everybody, and welcome. If you're just joining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I was so caught up in the breaking news of the day, this hour, in fact, as to the hearing for a temporary restraining order being heard presently in federal court in Washington, D.C. to stop the Trump takeover of Washington, D.C.'s police force, I forgot to give you all the word to win on this Free Ticket Friday. Again, the word to win, if you text it in via the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you get your apps from, will get you entered to win a 4-pack of Civic Media club level seats for the Brewers versus the San Francisco Giants game on Saturday, August 23rd. That's a 6 p.m. start time. And it is a Bob Uecker golf umbrella giveaway day. The word to win is home, H-O-M-E, as in, boy, I hope a lot of Brewers cross home plate today in their big game against the Cincinnati Reds in Cincinnati. The word to win, home, H-O-M-E, that is H-O-M-E. Text that in via the Civic Media app to be entered to win those tickets. Getting back to today's breaking news, of course, we are going to be talking about the Trump butt kiss of Vladimir Putin, a murderous dictator in Alaska. The very idea that you would invite a murderous dictator who has killed journalists, locked up people simply for disagreeing with him, and basically been overseeing a reign of terror in Russia for the last 25 years, that you would invite a murderous dictator onto U.S. soil to have a piece of itself, appalling. Don't worry, we're going to get to that breaking news. We've got Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University joining me at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get into the Trump summit and discuss what the implications of this are. We're going to discuss all the staging of the summit, which was extensive. But I want to share some other breaking news with you. I'm going to return to what is occurring in Washington, D.C. in a moment, but in other very important news. If you were listening to me yesterday, the entire 5 o'clock hour, most of it at least, was dedicated to me making an argument that Donald Trump is the most anti-business, anti-capitalist, anti-free market president in modern American history, which by extension makes him an anti-consumer president. Of course, Trump's taco tariffs, that's an example of that. Defunding research out of universities, that's an example of that. Donald Trump trying to control NVIDIA, an example of that. Donald Trump trying to force Goldman Sachs to fire an economist, force Intel to fire their CEO, all examples of that. Donald Trump just interested in picking winners and losers. And trust me, he ain't rubbing elbows with anybody who has a boss or earns a paycheck, which means the winners Donald Trump are picking, yeah, they're not you. This today, in furtherance of my argument yesterday, a federal appeals court led by a Donald Trump-appointed judge has greenlit the Trump administration's plans to decimate the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in a 2-to-1 ruling. In this 49-page ruling, Judge Gregory Katsas, again a Trump appointee for the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, wrote that the initial trial court judge who had prevented the Trump administration from firing over 1,700 workers at the CFPB, that she had no jurisdiction to do so. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Watch this space. Of course, Donald Trump doesn't want anybody protecting consumers because those are middle-class people and he doesn't really care about any of us. That breaking news just this afternoon. I don't know what is going on in the D.C. Appeals bench, but that is a truly disturbing decision from them, and it will end up harming consumers, no doubt. In some breaking news also today, a little bit closer to home, Rebecca Cook announcing a big powwow, a big town hall with none other than Senator Bernie Sanders. That town hall announced for Saturday, August 23rd. It will be held at 12 p.m. It's being marketed as Fighting Oligarchy, a town hall conversation with Bernie and Rebecca Cook in Viroqua. The location will be the Pierce Hill Performing Arts Center on Orchard Row Road. There is information that's available to the public. You can RSVP. Those are encouraged. Just Google this stuff. The doors open for that event on the 23rd at 10:30 a.m. Very interesting to see how that race in that congressional district, these ladies, three ladies on the Democratic side, throwing their hats in for the primary to run against the bully, otherwise known as Congressman Derek Van Orden. So that's a little bit closer to home. Also closer to home today, and I hope we have some time to get into this a little bit later before we close out the show, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley putting out a warning to folks that there may be more storm surges this weekend. You can go to the county's website. They have all sorts of tips on how to prepare your home to try to prevent flooding. We'll see if we've got some time today to squeeze that in. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Here on the Civic Media Radio Network, we're going to be joined again by Professor Lowell Barrington from Marquette University to discuss that Russia summit happening in Alaska as we speak. Here are a couple of the tips from the county executive. I'll see if I can get through the bulk of them. Make sure your sump pump is working. That's a pretty basic one. Check all your openings to your home. Look at walls, where the walls join the ground outside. Check your windows for leakage, floors and roofs. Make sure if they were damaged and not fully repaired yet, use heavy-duty plastic sheeting or tarps to try to keep the rain out. You still have time to buy sealant if you see cracks or other waterproof caulking or quick-dry cement to patch small openings. Know where you shut off electricity and gas in your house. If you think your house will be flooded, go ahead and turn them off to avoid electrical shocks or gas leaks. Unplug appliances in damaged areas before the rain starts. Clear leaves and debris from storm drains and take care this weekend. You should also consider moving your electronics, important papers, and valuables off the floor, especially in basements. We'll be right back with Professor Lowell Barrington to discuss the Russia Summit here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy Friday, one and all. And we hope here at Civic Media this summer to make your Fridays a little happier with Free Ticket Friday. Get your cell phones out. Download that Civic Media app. You can get it for free anywhere you get your apps from. And text the word HOME, H-O-M-E, that is home, as in I was born and raised in Milwaukee. It is my home, H-O-M-E. Text it in via the app right now. Get it in before 5 o'clock. That will get you entered to win 4 tickets to the Brewers versus the San Francisco Giants on Saturday, August 23rd. They're beautiful club-level tickets. And it is the Euchre Golf Umbrella Giveaway Day. Even if you don't dig the game so much, you might want to go just to get your hands on that beautiful umbrella. Again, text in the word HOME, H-O-M-E, via the Civic Media app right now. Get it in before 5 to enter to win those 4 tickets. And don't forget to mark your calendars. I'll be talking with Brewers CEO Rick Schlesinger next Wednesday, August 20th at 5:30 about the miracle in Milwaukee. But right now we've got Marquette University Professor Lowell Barrington. He's a professor of political science there to help us all understand what exactly is going on at an Army base just outside Anchorage, Alaska, between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin today, and what the implications are both domestically here in the United States for our support for Ukraine, as well as longer-term implications. Welcome back to the program, Professor Barrington. Thank you for making time. I know you're on the road.
Hi, Maggie. Yeah, it's great to be back with you.
Let's set the stage. The optics, I don't know. I know you've been driving. The optics of Putin's arrival today were kind of, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance, I guess, is a fair way to describe this. President Trump's arrival in Anchorage, as well as Vladimir Putin's arrival, they were coordinated. They basically landed at the same time. Donald Trump had given some comments earlier in the day en route to Alaska aboard Air Force One. We may get into a few of those. But the leaders stepped off their planes almost simultaneously. This is at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage at about 11:09 a.m. local time. That's about 2 p.m. here in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. They descended the steps from their airplanes. They shook hands, smiling. There was a lot of, like, glad-handing, sort of, for lack of a better phrase, affectionate touching. They strode down the red carpet together, smiling. They shook hands again. They didn't take or answer any questions from reporters. It was kind of weird, both when they were on the tarmac and then when they reached inside this building. Very weird, because Donald Trump always just kind of talks to reporters. And here's the other thing that was quite unusual. there was a limousine there to transport Vladimir Putin. It is generally the diplomatic norm that heads of state don't ride together, especially in the case of these sorts of peace summits. Putin had his own car, so did Trump, the Beast. They actually both got into the Beast alone, nobody else in the car, which Professor Barrington brought up memories for me of Donald Trump sitting alone with Vladimir Putin back in Helsinki in 2018. We've got some of that sound. We may get to it. But with all of that, did you find any of the visuals this afternoon, Professor, a little bit odd or at least surprising in the amount of pomp and circumstance? Were you surprised that they rode together? I mean, it's highly unusual.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't maybe surprised to the extent that I think one of the things about this summit is we've seen from the Trump administration side of the last few days a real kind of scaling back of expectations in
yes.
terms of what's actually going to come out of it. So I think some of this, you know, as you said, the kind of pomp and circumstance is to try to show that it's a real thing, even if at the end of the day, we don't get a lot out of it. I did see a few things, and I guess I'm not a huge, like, you know, body language person in figuring out what those things mean. I will say it was odd to see Trump kind of slightly clapping as Putin was walking toward him.
Yes.
That's a very, again, kind of very deferential kind of thing to do, right? So I did think that was weird. I will agree with you that I am not thrilled with the idea that they were riding, you know, kind of together without people with them on the way over. And in fact, I imagine some people in Europe are not thrilled either. There were European officials who were overjoyed to hear that this was not going to be a one-on-one meeting, that there was going to be at least kind of three-on-three, and the, you know, the Secretary
yes.
of State on our side, the Foreign Minister on their side is going to be there, special envoys are going to be there. Like, this group thing was a way of kind of protecting perhaps Ukraine's interest from, you know, Trump doing something that you know, later on they'd have to try to address. So I think that is a concern that they had that period of time. I don't know that much probably happened during it, but again, the visual of it and again, for Europe really hoping this wasn't going to turn into a kind of Helsinki rerun, you know, I think there's probably some concerned people there.
Yeah, again, the two of these guys together alone, I think even Trump supporters might get a little nervous about that. And in case anybody forgot why people get concerned about things like this, let's just run the tape from Donald Trump. This is the press conference after he and Putin back in 2018 met for hours alone. He was asked a question. Well, I think we've got actually the question and then his answer. Take a listen to this. It's in case you've forgotten.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
People came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today.
Yeah, that's why people get nervous about Trump being alone with Putin, because Putin is a former intelligence operative with the KGB. Donald Trump is not an intelligence operative on any level, but we're going to set that aside. Professor Barrington, I want you to help us understand the various regions of Ukraine, because most of the commentators that I have seen are talking about the possibility of some kind of land swap or land concession from Ukraine to Russia. So help us understand where this is and the various regions of Ukraine and what's actually on the table.
Yeah, thank you, Meg. That's a great question. I think I will say that the territorial concessions piece of this is central. If there's even going to be a ceasefire, not just to mention an actual, you know, end of the conflict itself, but just a ceasefire, that Putin has laid out that Russia expects on their side to keep the territory it already has under its control, plus additional territory in a couple of the regions. that it doesn't even control yet, and, you know, lots of other things, right, that Ukraine must basically say it will never approach being a NATO member again, like all these kinds of things, right, that they have laid out. But what we have, in essentially an understanding the territorial piece of this, is five regions, I guess I'd highlight. The first one's Crimea. It's the one that has a very interesting history, by the way, given to Ukraine in 1954. It used to be part of the Russia, part of the Soviet Union, was transferred to Ukraine under Khrushchev, but, you know, taken over by Russia in 2014 when they invaded at that point. And that is one that, again, is the going to be the hardest for Ukraine to possibly get back, right? So that's one that I think on the, as we're thinking of what's realistic about what Ukraine might get back from Russian control, that one's hard to picture. All these are then kind of successively to the northeast. So Kherson is a really important region because it does have the coastline and an area where, again, there would be important ports for Ukraine if it controlled it. They don't control those areas. Russia controls about two-thirds of the area of Kherson. Zaporizhia is to the northeast of that then, and that is, again, the majority of the coast of the Sea of Azov, which is a part of the Black Sea. That is in that region of Ukraine. Again, Russia controls about two-thirds of that. And by the way, Putin has mentioned wanting not just more territory in Kherson and Zaporizhia, but at a minimum, the two capital cities of those two areas, which right now Russia does not have control of. And then the two main ones I think people talk a lot about is the Donbas region, is the broader region called Donbas, is actually two regions, Donetsk and Luhansk. Russia has almost complete control of Luhansk. Donetsk, it has most of the territory controlled. And those were areas that, again, it got in control in 2014 through kind of using proxy forces and then sending in their own troops and things as well. So there's been a kind of ongoing conflict people forget about in Donetsk and Luhansk and in Crimea between Ukraine and Russia, you know, since 2014. 2022 became the last big push then of Russian troops in to try to grab more of these territories. So if you picture that many areas of Ukraine that Russia controls, and then picture that most of that is along a coastline, that means that right now without that area, Ukraine is basically down to Odessa as one port that it controls, right, which is a very difficult situation economically for it, right? So Ukraine's going to want at least port access, at least I would assume that they'd want the port access back from Zaporizhia and Kherson. They're also going to want as much as they can get of Donetsk and Luhansk. And again, Putin's going to push for more territory even than they currently control. So understanding the importance of the territory to Ukraine, but also the way in which Russia's got the upper hand right now, and in fact, in the last, you know, month or so of the war, has also been gaining territory in Donetsk kind of as we speak. So there's a lot going on there, and I think it means that it's a pretty complicated situation. For a long time, Zelensky had been saying nothing about territorial concessions. We're not even going to talk about it. He continued to say that about a week ago, that basically it's unconstitutional for him to do that. But the reality for him is that even his own public opinion on this is starting to change a bit in Ukraine. Used to be about 90% of the population of Ukraine in really legitimate surveys are being done, said absolutely zero territorial concessions, even Crimea to Russia. It's now down to about a third of the people that are actually open to some degree of territorial concessions, maybe upwards of 40%. So I do think, again, it is going to be the case that this probably has to involve territorial concessions in some way. And I actually think there's an argument. I don't think this makes me very popular in the Ukrainian studies community, but there is an argument that some limited territorial concessions, particularly in Donetsk and Luhansk, might actually be in Ukraine's long-term stability interests.
Fascinating. Folks, we've got from Marquette University, Professor of Political Science, Lowell Barrington. We're talking about the summit that is going on right now with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Alaska at a base just outside of Anchorage. They are right now, as I am speaking to you, in those discussions with Donald Trump. He has Secretary of State Marco Rubio, as well as his special envoy, Steve Witkoff. Putin is joined by Sergey Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, as well as at least, I believe, one other staffer. So there's basically three gentlemen from each side, and these discussions are ongoing right now. When we come back with Professor Barrington, we're going to talk about the implications for international peace, diplomacy, of the fact that we are discussing that on the table are territorial concessions when Russia unprovoked invaded a sovereign country. We'll also address the fact that Zelensky is nowhere to be found at this summit. Don't go anywhere. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks, it is Free Ticket Friday, so text in the word to win via the Civic Media app, and you will be entered to win 4 club-level tickets to the Brewers versus the San Francisco Giants on August 23rd. That's Saturday. It's a 6:10 game, and it is the Bob Uecker Golf Umbrella Giveaway Day. I know I don't want to miss it. I'm going to make every effort to be there. So if you want to be there with me and all the other Brewers fans for this incredible run that they're having, you're going to want to text in the word HOME. That's H-O-M-E, HOME, right now. You got to get it in before 5 p.m. via the Civic Media app to be entered to win. We've got Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University. He's a political scientist and a historian. We're talking about what's going on right now as we speak. Donald Trump meeting with Vladimir Putin in Anchorage, Alaska, at a base just outside of Anchorage. Donald Trump joined by, and we were just mentioning this before we went to break, Donald Trump joined by Secretary of State Marco Rubio and his special envoy Steve Witkoff. Putin in the room with Trump, joined by Sergey Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, as well as Yuri Ushakov. And Professor Barrington, we were talking during the break about comparing the relative heft of the three men in the room on behalf of Russia to the resume heft of the three men in the room for the United States. And I think it's fair to say that just pound for pound, if you will, mixing some metaphors here, we're a bit outmatched in terms of experience in these sorts of diplomatic matters and intelligence matters. Is that a fair statement, Professor?
Well, I think it is, in that if you look at the experience of the three people, I mean, Putin was a KGB officer. He studied in other countries, lived in other countries, really got to kind of know the West in a serious way. And he's been president of Russia for 25 years. I mean, so that alone. But then you put a longtime foreign minister, Lavrov, and then also Ushakov was the Russian ambassador, even in the Soviet period, Soviet ambassador, but then Russian ambassador to the United States. So he knows the U.S. really well, knows foreign policy really well. So it is, even though it's a kind of three-on-three instead of one-on-one, it is a quite, from an experience standpoint, formidable, you know, team on the Russian side.
Yeah, that is a remarkable fact about these negotiations in and of itself. What do you think, you know, if you're looking at the realm of possible outcomes, Professor, what do you think is doable in this meeting, given that the president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, isn't there, not in the room? What do you make of that? How do you broker a peace if one side of the war isn't involved in the discussion?
Right. Well, I mean, there are situations in which in arbitration, I guess the arbitrator meets with one side separately and then meets with the other side. I don't know when we're going to meet with Zelensky in the same way we're meeting with Putin here. But there, you know, it is ultimately at the end of the day, Ukraine has to be involved in these discussions. And I would argue Europe has to be involved in these discussions. I think one time we talked previously, I talked about this great statement from a European official about how people keep talking about whether Europe's going to be brought to the table in these, and at some point Europe just needs to make its own table, right? And I think that is something that we need to keep in mind, that Europe sees itself as snubbed here as much as Zelensky sees himself snubbed by this event as well. So first of all, I mean, when you're negotiating with only one side, there is sort of in some ways only so much you can do, because what you bring back to the other side still has to then be negotiated with them. But I would also say it's clear that even Trump himself realizes that the outcome of this is not going to be a breakthrough where, you know, Putin's going to make all these concessions and there's going to be immediate ceasefire and Zelensky will be happy to agree, right? That it went from we're going to get a ceasefire out of this to well, this might set the table for a second meeting, right? Like that's kind of the new goal, it sounds like, out of these. So I don't think even the U.S. side expects that there will likely be a big breakthrough. I actually think what we should be watching for in the follow-up meetings, there's some kind of extended delegation meetings going on. I think what we're most likely to get from real decisions here are some U.S.-Russia economic agreements coming out of this, as much as we're going to get anything about the Ukraine-Russia war.
Mm. And is that really the actual objective here? Just this week in the Washington Post, Vladimir Kara-Murza, one of Russia's best known and still living Putin opponents and dissidents, wrote this. In the most important sense, Putin got everything he wanted before he even set foot on Alaskan soil. The invitation itself was the prize. Putin is an illegitimate usurper who has long overstayed constitutional term limits. He's an indicted war criminal with an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court. He's a dictator who, to quote Marco Rubio's own words, manipulated the electoral system to maintain his illegitimate grip on power. He's imprisoned and murdered political opponents, and yet with just one phone call from the American president, Putin has been readmitted as a bona fide participant in the international community and is emboldened to make his ever-escalating demands. What are the long-term implications of this summit, Professor?
Again, I think there is an argument that if we don't get anything out of this in a serious way in terms of the Ukraine-Russia conflict, it does even kind of further weaken in some ways Trump's standing globally and the U.S. standing globally, because we did do all those things, Kara-Murza said. And by the way, I was going to mention to you, I'm glad he said it in that statement. Putin is in fact an indicted war criminal. And this is a decision the U.S. has made to not enforce warrants, for example, from the International Criminal Court or any kind of situation like that, where in some countries, if Putin set foot on the soil, he would actually be turned over. He'd
be arrested.
Right? We do not follow that. And instead, in fact, have kind of elevated him, again, on par with Trump, as we've talked about, with everything that went on when they both landed and things like that today.
Yeah, B-2 bomber flyover. We could spend an entire show talking about the U.S.'s very bizarre relationship with the International Criminal Court. Thank you so much, Professor Lowell Barrington of Marquette University. When I come back, we discuss MMSD's efforts to save Milwaukee.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.